Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take complex clinical topics and, well, we try to boil them down to the essentials you need fast.
And today, we're tackling something incredibly high stakes. Those first critical moments of life. We're talking about newborn care and, crucially, neonatal resuscitation when things go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Our focus is really on what the guidelines tell us about physiology, the immediate assessment, and the advanced steps needed.
It's all based on solid clinical sources.
Yeah.
And the timing. It's just incredibly tight. Success or failure really can hinge on just a couple of minutes.
So we're looking at two key periods here. The sources call the first few hours the newborn phase.
Right.
And then the first whole month is the neonate phase. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, you know, it's only about 1% of deliveries that need really skilled interventions for breathing and heart function.
Which is good news. Relatively speaking.
There's still a significant group, about 8% of newborns, who are low birth weight under 5.5 pounds. That presents its own challenges.
Absolutely. And it's so important to remember, even in a crisis, supporting the family, the caregivers, that's still central to everything we do.
Okay, let's jump into the science. That moment of birth, you called it the great switch. What exactly is happening physiologically? It sounds dramatic.
Oh, it absolutely is. It's this incredible biological flip. See, in the womb, the fetus isn't using its lungs for oxygen, so blood flow is routed differently using three bypasses or shunts.
Shunts, okay.
Yeah. You've got the ductus venosus, which mostly bypasses the liver. Then the foramen ovale, a hole between the heart's upper chambers, letting blood go right to left.
Skipping the lungs, essentially.
Exactly. And the third is the ductus arteriosus, which moves blood from the pulmonary artery directly into the aorta, again, bypassing the lungs.
So these are vital before birth, but after birth, they need to go away fast.
Instantly, they have to close. And the trigger for all this, it's actually that first breath. It's not random. It's set off by a slight natural stress state, mild hypoxia and hypercapnia.
Right. So low oxygen and slightly high CO2. That's the kickstart.
That's the kickstart. It triggers the mechanical change needed. The lungs inflate with air and bang, the resistance in the lungs' blood vessels just plummets.
Ah, so blood can finally rush into the lungs.
Precisely. It gets oxygenated and normal circulation begins.
But what if that pressure drop doesn't happen, if it's delayed?
That's the emergency scenario. Delayed transition means no oxygen or very little getting into the blood. That quickly leads to hypoxia, brain injury, potentially death. That switch happening on time is absolutely critical.
Okay, so assuming that switch happens, we move into immediate actions. Arrival, assessment, stabilization. What are the absolute must-haves, even, say, in a field delivery?
The basics are pretty simple but vital. Warm, dry blankets are key. A bulb syringe for secretions. Two clamps or ties for the cord. And clean scissors.
And you mentioned warmth. Hypothermia sounds like a major enemy here.
It's the biggest immediate threat. Newborns lose heat incredibly fast, especially when wet. They just can't regulate their temperature well at all.
So warming them up isn't just comfort, it's stabilization. Step one, how fast?
Immediately. Right onto pre-warm towels or under a radiant warmer. Dry them thoroughly head and body, and this is crucial. Get those wet towels off them straight away. They just suck heat out.
Right, makes sense.
And cover with dry blankets, put a cap on the head, and skin to skin with mom. Fantastic for ongoing warmth if she's stable.
Okay, visual assessment. I was a bit surprised by this. The sources say all babies look a bit blue, cyanotic, right at birth. We kind of expect that pink, crying baby.
Yeah, that initial cyanosis is normal. If the baby's vigorous, crying, moving, they should start pinking up within about 5 minutes as oxygen levels climb. We use the Apgar score to track this, right?
The Apgar, yeah. What's the key takeaway for using it practically?
It's just a standard snapshot at 1 minute and 5 minutes after birth.
Yeah.
Looks at heart rate, breathing, muscle tone, reflexes, color. The magic number is 7.
7.
If the score is less than 7 at 5 minutes, you absolutely must repeat the assessment every 5 minutes, up to 20 minutes total. It tells you that this baby needs continued close watch, maybe more help.
Okay, now we're moving into, well, the red zone. The resuscitation algorithm. When stimulation isn't enough and the baby's depressed, you said time is brain.
Absolutely. Section 3 in the guidelines, this is where the 60-second deadline is everything. In that first minute, you have to do the initial steps, warm, position, clear airway, dry, stimulate, then reevaluate. And if needed, start ventilation, all within 60 seconds.
Wow. Okay, so heart rate drives the decisions. What are the numbers?
Yes, heart rate is key. After those initial steps, if the baby's not breathing, apneic, or the heart rate is below 100 beats per minute, you need to start positive pressure ventilation, PPV. Immediately.
PPV, okay. And if that doesn't bring the heart rate up?
If the pulse stays under 60 beats per minute, despite good ventilation for about 30 seconds, you have to escalate.
Yep.
Start chest compressions right away.
Got it. The ventilation rate I noticed is really fast, 40 to 60 breaths a minute. That seems quick.
It is. We're trying to rapidly oxygenate and get that gas exchange going that didn't start on its own. Different from adults. And that's why the compression coordination is different too. For newborns, breathing support is usually the priority.
Ah, okay. So what's the ratio for compressions and breaths?
It takes two people, ideally. It's a 3-to-1 ratio. 3 compressions, then 1 breath. Cycle repeats. That works out to about 90 compressions and 30 breaths per minute. And importantly, you don't do them at the same time like an adult CPR. Pause compressions for the breath.
And how deep for the compressions?
About 1/3 of the chest's front-to-back diameter. The 2-thumb technique encircling the chest is generally preferred.
Okay, 3.1 ratio, coordinated. When do you check if it's working?
After 60 seconds of really good coordinated compressions and ventilation. Check the heart rate again if it's still below 60.
Then what?
Do you escalate again? That's when epinephrine comes in. Preferably through an IV line for the fastest effect.
That's a very clear, very rapid escalation pathway. Okay, let's talk specific complications. Meconium aspiration is a big one, right?
Huge risk. If there's meconium, that thick first stool in the amniotic fluid, and the baby inhales it, big trouble. Pneumonia, pneumothorax, severe hypoxia.
So management is all about the airway.
Primarily. Keep the airway clear. Keep them warm. But also, interestingly, minimize stimulation if they're vigorous. Overstimulating can sometimes worsen pulmonary hypertension.
Great.
If the baby is depressed, though not vigorous, then intubation and suctioning right below the cords might be needed before you start PPV.
Right, clear that airway first. Okay, other crises, metabolic ones.
Hypoglycemia is a major concern. Low blood sugar, defined as less than 45 milligrams per deciliter. It can cause seizures, brain damage, needs quick recognition and treatment, often with glucose.
Red apnea, just stopping breathing.
Yeah, a pause of 20 seconds or longer, it could be primary or often secondary to something else like hypothermia, sepsis, or hypoxia itself. And then pneumothorax, a collapsed lung. That can happen from meconium or sometimes, unfortunately, if PPV is too aggressive, especially in premature lungs. The sign. Severe respiratory distress that just doesn't get better with PPV. You have to suspect it and be ready for needle decompression.
Okay, here's something that really stood out as counterintuitive in the guidelines. Naloxone, or Narcan, for opioid exposure in the mother. The advice has changed.
It has, and this is critical. If the mother has a known chronic opioid use disorder, naloxone is no longer recommended as a first-line treatment for the baby's respiratory depression.
Wait, say that again. If mom's a chronic user, don't give the baby Narcan for respiratory depression. That goes against a lot of standard teaching.
It does. It's a huge shift. The risk is that giving naloxone to an opioid-dependent newborn can trigger severe sudden withdrawal, including seizures, which can be catastrophic.
So what do you do instead?
Focus on excellent ventilation support. Bag mask ventilation is the key. Support their breathing and get them transported quickly. Now, the caveat is naloxone might still be considered if the respiratory depression is from acute opioid administration to the mother during labor, like for pain relief. It's that chronic versus acute exposure distinction.
That is a really vital point to get right. Okay, briefly, prematurity and low birth weight. Delivery before 37 weeks or under 5.5 pounds.
The earlier they're born, the higher the risks, generally. For field management, it's about specialized care. Careful respiratory support, often needing CPAP or gentle PPV, using the minimum pressure needed to avoid injuring those fragile lungs. And meticulous attention to keeping them warm, that thermoneutral environment is absolutely crucial.
Makes sense. Okay, let's shift to structural issues. Congenital heart disease, CHD, it's the most common birth defect.
It is, yeah. A huge range of defects. Broadly, we think about them in two main categories based on how they affect blood flow and oxygenation. First, you have the non-cyanotic ones.
Non-cyanotic, yeah. So not typically blue.
Right. These are often left-to-right shunts. Oxygenated blood from the left side of the heart gets pushed back over to the right side and goes back through the lungs unnecessarily. It's inefficient. Think of things like a hole between the ventricles, VSD, or that ductus arteriosus failing to close, PDA.
Okay. Inefficient, but maybe not immediately life-threatening in the same way.
Often presents later with signs of heart failure, maybe poor feeding, rapid breathing. Then you have the cyanotic diseases.
These are the ones where the baby is blue.
Exactly. These are typically right-to-left shunts. Deoxygenated blood from the right side bypasses the lungs and goes straight out to the body. So the baby is profoundly cyanotic. This includes really complex stuff like tetralogy of Fallot.
Which needs surgery, right?
Oh, yes. Major surgery. Or things like hypoplastic left heart syndrome, where the whole left side of the heart is underdeveloped. Austin needs a transplant eventually.
So, for someone responding in the field, what's the main takeaway for CHD?
Recognize the possibility, especially with persistent cyanosis, despite oxygen or breathing support. Rapid transport is key. And really clear communication with medical control and the receiving hospital is vital. They need to know you suspect a complex cardiac issue so they can prepare specialist teams.
This has been incredibly informative. We've gone from that amazing physiological switch at birth right through the high-pressure, timed interventions of resuscitation. It really hammers home how delicate that newborn system is.
It really does. And what's so striking, when you look at the common complications, babies stopping breathing, heart rate dropping, seizures even, how often they can be traced back to two fundamental problems: getting cold, hypothermia,
yeah,
and low blood sugar, hypoglycemia.
So those aren't just side issues. They can actually cause the bigger crises, yeah, like a domino effect.
Exactly, yeah, like a domino effect. Getting cold makes the baby burn through energy faster to stay warm. That uses up their limited glucose stores, leading to hypoglycemia. The body's stress response to both cold and low sugar can further impair breathing and circulation, leading to apnea, bradycardia, which makes the hypoxia worse.
Which worsens the metabolic state and increases seizure risk. Wow.
It's a vicious cycle. So keeping that baby warm and ensuring adequate glucose isn't just supportive care. It's fundamental stabilization.
Yeah.
You have to actively manage the environment to prevent that whole cascade.
That really puts thermoregulation and glucose monitoring right at the center of care, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And maybe a final thought to leave everyone with. Think about what that dependency tells us. Yeah. That extreme vulnerability to temperature and sugar levels.
Yeah.
It suggests that for a newborn, just maintaining warmth and energy isn't some background task. It's like a primary core command for survival. Without it, the whole intricate system, circulation, neurology, everything is incredibly fragile and can quickly collapse.
A really powerful point about just how critical those first hours and days are. Thank you so much for walking us through all of this.
My pleasure. It's a vital information.
We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.